Coming up, it's the black market of social media. What does that mean and why are people engaging? Plus, Mulu.me is Pinterest meets charity. And is LinkedIn Premium actually worth the cost? All of that and a sarcastic rover up next on The Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur. Episode 72, recorded August 9th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. It's episode 72, in fact, from Petaluma Twit World Headquarters. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, the Canadian Twit headquarters, because I'm the only one here.
Yeah.
And,
it's a very important one. You have your own office. I don't have that here.
I do.
I share an office with 20 people.
I know. It was a little noisy earlier on when I tuned in, I have to say. A lot going on, Sarah, but it's always like that at Twit, so
it is.
Can't complain.
If for anybody who's watching us live, you know that usually, for the last 4 weeks or so, we've been at our new live time, which is Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. This is Thursday, and we're recording right after they shoot the live edition of Know How, which is another new show on the Twit Network. Because I'm going to be traveling tomorrow, and this just made a lot of sense for us, but Thursdays happen to be a lot busier than Fridays. So yes, Amber, you saw some crazy energy right before we got started, although everyone seems to either have left or be really polite and quiet.
I think they're in a production meeting.
They're in a production meeting. That's what it is. Actually, this is a really good time to do the show because nobody will bother us.
Very cool. Well, last I saw Leo run in with a chocolate bar trying to tease me, and then he was gone, and it got real quiet after that. So it makes sense that they've all disappeared to one place.
Yeah, the chocolate gets consumed, and everybody's really, really happy, and the world is in a good place. And then an hour later, everyone's like...
It's like that you crash.
Episode of Parks and Rec where they are all eating the Smarties or whatever they are. Anyway, let's get right into some of our stories. We've got quite a few of them. The first one is, it's funny that both of us have been reading about the black market of social this week because I have a kind of a funny story to tell you, Amber. Speaking of the black market, I was hanging out with some friends who shall remain nameless over the last week. And one of my friends had a birthday recently. And the other friend was making a joke about how she had bought her some people or something for her birthday. And I was like, what are you guys talking about? Friend one bought friend two 20,000 Twitter followers. And I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean that you bought her that? And she said, no, there's a service. It doesn't even cost that much. It wasn't $20,000. It was more like $20. And you buy followers, and they're bots. They're not real. They're actual accounts that are set up on Twitter by, bypassing CAPTCHA or something. But it's not as if they're actually people behind there who are going to click on anything you want them to click on or retweet your stuff. But they beef up your numbers to other people who aren't paying very close attention. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what are you guys doing?
I know. It's so funny. It's really funny that you had that experience because one of the reasons I wanted to also talk about this story is that I was meeting with someone I know who's a very well-known TV personality on a business news network. And I was chatting with him about Twitter and how to use Twitter and how to grow your presence there. And he was mentioning to me, and he shall also remain nameless, that someone he was talking to recommended that he buy followers. And there was absolutely nothing wrong with that. And you can imagine my horror when he mentioned this because for someone like me and like you, Sarah, who talks a lot about being authentic online and building up your community in a really organic way and knowing people that follow you, I just think this is definitely something that is in good practice. And then I read this article on Business News Daily that talked about the growing black market in social media. How many people buy followers? How many people are able to fake their presence? I think last week, Facebook was discussing how there's a huge amount, 83 million of its accounts that are fake accounts. And we see stories about politicians, for example, whose numbers are astronomical. There's no way they could have ever have gained that many followers in an authentic way. And it truly is a growing market. And I'd be curious about what some of our listeners think about this, but I do think it's wrong and really takes away from the value of social media and the value of having a real, authentic community.
I totally agree with you. I can't imagine. I understand that on the surface, let's say you are trying to build up your name. You just wrote a book or something, or in some sort of a online way, you want to somehow seem like you have more clout. Which I know is a funny word now. I'm not talking about the service clout, but it's all kind of related, right? That on the surface, let's say you had 400 followers and they were very engaged with you and you had great conversations and everything. Well, it's a perfectly reasonable way to use Twitter for you, but maybe to somebody who's going to have you speak at a conference or something like that, they kind of look at your account and say, well, compared to a lot of other people, you seem sort of like a nobody. I think that it's easy for people to get caught up in, well, I have to at least appear like I'm really popular in order to get more popular, because those sorts of, you know, I'm more likely to get followed by someone if I have 50,000 followers than if I have 5,000, because they figure there's something good going on behind the scenes. And if I am sharing good content, then what's so wrong about it? Well, first of all, Twitter doesn't seem to be cracking down on any of these accounts. Gizmodo actually had a good article I read recently that pretty much detailed, here's how you would pay a certain amount of money, not very much. I mean, sometimes it's as low as just, you know, $5 or so, to get a bunch of followers. They're not condoning it. They're just illustrating how easy it is. But, even if Twitter's not cracking down on this stuff, which it doesn't really seem to be, first of all, these are spam accounts. Someone like me can always go in and mark as spam, and those kind of accounts go away sooner or later. And Twitter has the right to shut you down for bypassing its terms of service, which are a little bit murky about this sort of thing. But Twitter doesn't want this to be happening. I mean, this is just a bunch of bloaty nothing. I mean, this is nothing. It's cramming the network with absolutely nothing of value at all, and it makes the service not act as intended. And yeah, I don't think it's a good idea. And as someone said in the chat room, it doesn't actually make you more popular. It's just the perception of that, and that's like the worst anyway. You know, it's like the people who want to be perceived as popular are never the ones that are popular. I mean, that's kind of the way it goes online or in real life or anything.
And the problem is, and this will be the last thing I'll say about this, because I think it's pretty clear how we feel about it, but one of the problems is that, like you said, it's not doing any service to you as an individual. So let's say you go on Twitter because you want to market yourself, you want to market your business, you want to increase your sales opportunities. The reality is these accounts are meaningless. They're never going to help you. They're never going to be able to further your brand or help you increase your sales. They're just going to be sitting there. So all people are focusing on is the number, and it's meaningless because there's no real power behind that. So I think that you want to shy away from this. And I think there's a lot of good people out there who don't think there's anything wrong with it because they don't understand the dynamics of it and don't understand what's right or wrong in the Twitter community. So hopefully we've shed a little bit of light on that.
Yeah. And the last thing I will say, and then yes, Amber, we should move on, is somebody mentioned in chat, well, corporations might want to beef up their numbers because Twitter followers can sometimes mean, well, we have the potential to reach 900 million people. That would actually be a lot of followers to buy. But, instead of the reality. And I mean, I kind of equate that to cooking the books. I mean, that is just deceptive behavior. You can't, if you know that you've bought meaningless followers, those aren't actually followers. And that should never be a number that you pass along to somebody as a legitimate number.
Exactly. Sarah, I just have to mention something really quickly because I always follow my Twitter feed just like you follow the chat room during the show. And it's really cool. Someone on Twitter just sent us a message and he's watching the show while he's flying. He's at 30,000 feet and he's streaming the show live. So I thought that was kind of cool. So a big shout out to Earth Explorer on Twitter, who's JD Andrews. I don't know him, but obviously he's a fan and kind of fun to think about people watching us in the air. Very cool.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday. while you're up there. All right, should we move on now to the idea of being able to see your personal Gmail results when you search for something in Google, Amber? My first reaction to this was, why would you combine the two? Gmail is inherently personal. Not every single email that I write in Gmail, it would be something that I would have a problem if it became public. But some of them are. And it's not just for me, it's other people's information. And, you know, you assume that emails are, for the most part, at least have some level of privacy. And I go, if I want all those two together. But it turns out that the Gmail results won't actually be in line with something that you were just searching for. If you search for the word horse on Google, it's not like you're going to start seeing these emails crop up and you'll be confused. You have your horse results, and then over on the right-hand side, in a box, clearly marked Gmail inbox, might have been an email thread that Amber and I had about wanting to go see a horse race when we finally meet one day, type of a thing. But at the same time, and we talked about this a little bit on Tech News Today earlier today, is I guess my main issue with this is Google deciding for me how I want my results laid out. Even if it's not confusing, even if it's not a privacy issue, it sort of bothers me that Google says, hey, here, you might actually just want this all on the same page, so we'll just go ahead and add that to your Google results page, kind of the way that we suggest adding people to an email conversation that you didn't add yourself manually. I don't know. It's like they're overstepping their bounds of how they want me to behave.
Yeah, I'm just not sure that this would be useful. I can't think of a use case where it would be helpful to have those results. I mean, if I'm looking for something that is personal, I'm going to search my Gmail account. If it's something external to that, I'm going to search Google. So at first, I really wasn't a fan of this. I think, like you said, it's sort of mixing the personal and public experience as far as using Google services. However, the good news for people is that it's opt-in right now. You can give it a try. It's a limited field trial that they're offering up to you, some of their users. But I just don't see wanting to use something like this. And I don't love it. And it makes me a little bit uncomfortable. And I think back to the days when you had context sensitive advertising in your Gmail inbox. Now we're kind of used to it, right, Sarah? When you see an ad that's related to the content in your inbox and Google started penetrating that world. And it's sort of a gray area for me. It's something that I don't think that I would use. And I just think in some ways, like you mentioned, it just it's a bit invasive and I'm not sure it's going to catch on.
I'm trying to think of when it would be helpful to me. There are certain times where this happens to me in iOS because I have so many apps on my iPad, let's say, that I'm constantly swiping all the way to the left and searching for an app. And sometimes it's like, do I have this app or when did I download this? Or And some, you know, as you're typing in the app, if you've got it, it'll show up right at the top of the results. But also anything that mentions the words that you're typing in might show up in Apple Mail, in an email thread, for example, or in a contact, if there's a contact that seems to match up with, you know, if you have a contact that works at Green Bay Enterprises and you type in Green Bay, that contact will come up. Every so often, I will use that feature because I'm looking for a specific email. But it is not very often at all. And I figure that's kind of the same behavior. And even then, it's sort of off to the side. It's not actually on a search page that I'm using for the web. So I'm with you. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I think Google, they experiment a lot. That's fine. Some of their projects work better than others. This seems to be one of those projects I feel, at least for now, doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, definitely. Not a huge fan of it either, but we'll see what happens with it. If anyone's trying it out who's listening to the show, let us know if there's any use for it, because I can't imagine one at this moment.
So, Amber, this might surprise you, but until yesterday, Pinterest was not actually an open network. You still had to be invited by somebody or, yeah, I don't know, be part of some giveaway code on a variety of websites. And now, finally, if you have never had a Pinterest account and didn't have any friends who were on it that were willing to invite you to give you a code so that you could join the show, you now can get your own and you don't need anyone to help you.
Very cool. I mean, I'm sure this was frustrating some people, so it's good to see it open to the public. But I think you're right. A lot of people would have assumed that it has been open to the public for a while. It's funny, you know, I've been really trying, especially to serve the audience of the Social Hour, to use Pinterest more and experiment and jump around in the service. But one thing that really frustrates me, Sarah, and I don't know if you have a similar experience, but just the search capabilities and the way that you have to try to hone in on finding particular content in Pinterest, I feel like it's not really that great as far as trying to find what you're looking for. And that frustrates me a little bit. So I'm dabbling as far as using it, but not as much as many people are out there.
I'm with you. We've said from the very beginning, both Amber and I have said, hey, you know, looks great, works well. We got it. Understand the concept for the most part. But it has been like pulling teeth to get me to go there on a regular basis. I'm certainly not going there on a daily basis. And I think that a part of that has to do with the fact that Pinterest has a really large user base of people who aren't really on other social networks. I mean, these might be folks who have Facebook accounts, maybe even are on Twitter, certainly know what Google Plus is, but aren't using all of them together. Pinterest is really a bookmarking site. It's very visual. A lot of people like it and has caught on for, I think, a lot of people who have a lot of social networking time to spare, let's say. I'm choosing my words carefully. I don't want to say it's people don't really use the internet that much, because I don't know that to be true. But I think for us, there are only so many hours in the day, and Pinterest is not my essential place. So we actually have a service a little bit later in our show, in our spotlight, that has Pinterest-like qualities that actually might be more helpful to our users. So definitely, we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But we do have some more news stories. First, a quick reminder that I said this at the top of the show, but we do usually record the Social Hour live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Today is a special time. We juggled our schedule around a little bit this week, so we're shooting after know-how, and they're having a TWIT staff meeting in the room, and there's hooting and hollering. I don't know, Amber. I think they're having a good time in there. I think Leo brought the chocolates in there.
So jealous.
There's quite a bit
so
of buzzing. Jealous. But if you ever miss any of our shows, or you wonder, what was that one Pinterest-like website that they talked about? I don't remember. It had a funny URL. Any of that stuff. Or you just want to, I don't know, kick back and watch the last four episodes because you know you're behind. You can always go to twit.tv/TSH. That is the Social Hour's place on the web. You can view our past episodes. Each episode page has a nice embedded video right on the page itself, so you can go ahead, play that, watch or listen, have it in a tab while you're doing other stuff. See, there's Amber and I. We do a lot of smiling and laughing.
Always a goofy screenshot from us, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And we also have our show notes on each episode page as well. So again, if you're looking for something we talked about, or you're just looking, well, for some reason we don't seem to have our show notes on that page. I think somebody was filling in for Jeff, who was on vacation last week, and they didn't put anything in the website. So that's something that I will definitely figure out. Anyway, that's our website, twit.tv/TSH. Hey, somebody, put in those show notes, please. Hey, you back there. All right, moving on, Amber, to some more social stories from around the web this week. Have you ever thought that somebody who didn't have a Facebook account somehow was suspicious, hiding something from you, seemed odd?
You know, it's funny, Sarah. I have thought that before, and I've always wondered why they wouldn't want to be on there. However, I feel like I'm meeting more and more people who have either left Facebook, and we touched on this last week, or who just never signed up in the first place. So maybe it is a little suspicious now that I think about it.
Well, this is a story from Forbes. It's great. Headline, "Beware tech abandoners. People without Facebook accounts are suspicious." And the idea is that something like Facebook is so, you know, it's so ubiquitous. So many people have accounts. Again, like we talked about just a few moments ago, people who aren't necessarily technical. In fact, many people who are not technical in the least are on Facebook, doing whatever they're doing on Facebook, to the point now where if you don't have a Facebook account, people start to wonder, like, I mean, are you like a anti-electronics person? You know, you start getting these questions like, why? Did something terrible happen? Do you not have a computer? Why wouldn't you want to be on Facebook? In fact, I think I briefly told you, Amber, the story where I ran into Megan Maroney, former colleague of mine at Tech TV, and I was like, why are we not talking on Facebook more? You know, because I just ran into her in real life randomly, and she's like, I'm not on Facebook. And my first reaction was, what? That's crazy. Because my reaction is, there's so much you could know about each other, and why wouldn't you want to do that? And of course, she has really good reasons. She's busy, and she likes talking to people face-to-face and whatever. But my first reaction was a little bit of a, something's wrong with your answer.
Yeah, no, I could definitely understand that. I think it's just become such the norm. You know, I understand if people aren't on Twitter, if they're not on Pinterest, but Facebook has always been that one place with, you know, more than 900 million users where you can pretty much find most people, you know, who are internet savvy have an account. So it's kind of shocking when you find someone. However, I will say that my very best friend, Jenna, she is not on Facebook and she has never signed up for Facebook. And that's a little strange for me because I know she's interested because I know she gets other mutual friends of ours or family members to go on and log in so she can see what people are doing, but she doesn't want to put the effort into having an account herself. So maybe I should be suspicious of her, Sarah.
Maybe you should. Yeah. I think there's something going on that, no, I don't at all. In fact, I wish that I didn't feel like I had to have a Facebook account. Wouldn't that be nice where you're just like, you know, I do because I really like it and it's something fun and interesting for me. I mean, I'm not a Facebook hater. Some people are. I am not. I enjoy keeping up with people. But I, even if I didn't and I said, nah, there's nothing about Facebook I like anymore, I would miss out on events and birthday parties and people trying to message me and not understanding that they can get a hold of me other places. I feel like I have to have it. I don't feel like I can get rid of it.
I think it's a bit of social pressure right now to be on Facebook. It's just expected that you'll be there and you'll be part of the conversation and linking up with people from your past and present as well. So I do think there is social pressure that you feel like you have to kind of log in and post something there. And I don't know. I mean, I've said it before on the show many times and people are probably sick of it, but it's going to be really fun, I think, over the next couple of years to see what happens with Facebook and how that community grows or perhaps dies off a little bit. Not actually dying off, but you know what I mean? User numbers maybe fall somewhat.
Yeah, I don't think that the Facebook of today will be the same company in a couple of years. I'm not saying it's because they only have a couple of years left, but I just, particularly because it recently became a public company, there's so much more scrutiny on what Facebook does and doesn't do and what might be a misstep that, and also their motivations change. You know, they're a for-profit company. They want to make as much money as possible because now they have people who have bought into the company who will be very upset if they don't. People with power, even individual investors, but it doesn't really work that way, you know, on Wall Street. So yeah, it'll be an interesting ride to see if they can get everybody in the world on Facebook. Because once they do that, then they have nowhere to go but Mars. Thank goodness we're already taking steps to ensure that the Martians will also be on Facebook eventually. Hey, before we get to some social tips, some spotlights, some of your viewer feedback, we want to take a moment to thank Audible for sponsoring this episode of Le Social Hour. If you're not familiar with Audible and you like the idea of listening to things, it's the best, particularly if you're a busy person and you don't have time to read, or for whatever reason, the months go by and you keep saying, gosh, you know, I should read more. I'm out of practice. I'll read a novel next month. I'll join a book club or something. And you know that it's probably not going to happen because your life just doesn't allow it. I am describing myself. Audible is the way that I can actually get through books without actually sitting down on Sunday for a few hours and reading a book and not doing anything else, because that, of course, requires full attention. What I can do while listening to audiobooks, which are really fun because you kind of, your mind can wander while you're doing other things. When I'm cooking, you know, when I'm prepping food, when I'm commuting, I have a long commute to and from the Twit Studios, so I can actually listen to books. I can get through like a book a week. That's amazing. Because I'm a captive audience, what else am I going to do? When I'm taking long walks, at the gym, you get the idea. The benefits of audiobooks is not only because we're busy and you can sort of work it into things that you're doing, but it really is a fun way to read a book because you are reading it, but it's a you're having it read to you by somebody. Now, some of the books are read by the authors themselves, which can be really fun, especially if it's a author that you really, really like, or maybe a celebrity author, and they've got a great voice, that sort of thing. But all of the books are read by people with really good voices. Some of the books have multiple voices, some of them just the one, but it's really fun. There's a neat quality to Audible that if you haven't tried it out, I really hope that you do. There's actually a novel, Amber. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's called Gone Girl. It's like the new big thing. It's the big,
I have not.
The big bestseller these days. I don't know anything about it, and I'm not going to read any reviews or anything like that. I'm just going to download it on Audible, and that's going to be my next novel that I listen to. If anyone has read the book or knows what I'm talking about, just don't spoil anything in the chat room for me. But here's the deal. So, okay, I've convinced you. You're interested. Why don't you download that book for free by going to audiblepodcast.com/social hour? Yes, that's right. If you sign up for an Audible account, you can get a free audiobook of your choice. Why not do that? Try Audible free for 30 days. Get a free audiobook. Go nuts. At the end of those 30 days, if you like the service, you can sign up because you already know that you like it because you were able to try it out. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/social hour. And we thank them very much for sponsoring this episode of our show. All right. What's next?
Okay. So, Sarah, last week on the show, or maybe it was the week before, we were talking about LinkedIn and talking about how valuable LinkedIn is and how people are using it. And in particular, how much it costs to upgrade your account. And so I do some writing for Fast Company. I blog for them pretty much every week. And I decided to do an article about LinkedIn and talking about if it's actually worth the upgrade to upgrade your account. Now, the first thing I will say is I don't know if anyone has ever gone in to try to upgrade their account on LinkedIn. The reality is it's very confusing. There are a lot of options. This isn't just like one choice and you can pay $20 for the year and it's done. The reality is there are four different categories as far as upgrading, and those include the business category, category for job seekers, a category for recruiters, and a category for sales professionals. Within each of those categories, there are actually different levels as far as where you can upgrade, how much you can pay to upgrade. You know, starting around $20, it goes up to over $100 a month if you're going for a premium account that gives you a bunch of different options. And it got a little bit overwhelming and confusing. So I'm hoping that I can try to kind of piece it together for people on the show and give them some idea about if it makes sense to actually upgrade. The first thing I wanted to actually just throw it back at you, Sarah, I don't know if you have just a basic account or if you've ever thought of upgrading, or how familiar are you with this process?
I'm somewhat familiar. I do have a basic account. I've never thought to upgrade because, I don't know. I guess that there are certain perks that I can see would be really helpful, particularly if, yeah, you're a recruiter or you're in the position where it's really important for you to see a lot of people who might fit a certain job description. I'm usually not in the process of hiring others. I'm more like, hey, here's all my information, and if I'm interesting to you, please feel free to send me a, you know, LinkedIn mail or something like that. But I'm looking at all of my upgrade options, which is easy to do when you're logged into LinkedIn. You know, it'll say what account type you have. There's a good chance a lot of people have the basic account. So if you click upgrade, you get all these options. But yeah, then I can see a lot of people looking at this page and going, ooh, executive. I'm not an executive. I don't know if I need this.
And then you go down to the bottom and those are more categories, right? So you think those are the only options, but there's actually three more categories just when you click on those for different types of professionals. So it gets very confusing. And I think I can kind of boil it down to three things, three reasons you might want to upgrade and three of the features you may not know about. One being that when you do upgrade, you get access to more powerful search. So the idea being that with just a basic account, you can only search a limited amount of, you only get a certain amount of results when you're searching. And this gives you more search results, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. So if you're searching for a specific person, also you get more detailed profile information. And that the feature we had talked about before, which you get when you upgrade, is the ability to see who has looked at your profile. Now, this totally creeps me out, as I mentioned last week, from a perspective of privacy, because I don't want people to know I'm poking around on creeping them on LinkedIn. But the reality is if you're looking for work, it might be interesting to see who's looked at your profile and really dive into some of those stats to understand what industries those people are from, what geographic area they may be from. So that's a neat feature. And then finally, InMails is another feature you get, which means that you can email or contact anyone on LinkedIn, which you can't do if you have just a basic account. You need to be introduced by someone else. So the more you pay for that monthly account, the more InMails you get, the more search results you get, and the more detailed profile information. So I personally think that it makes a lot of sense. And I think you hit it on the nail on the head right there with the idea. If you're a job seeker and you're really, really keen and really aggressive in terms of looking for work, you may want to upgrade. If you're recruiting someone, recruiting people, you would definitely want to upgrade. If sales is really key for your business and you want to make many more contacts and reach out to more people, it also makes sense. And if you're an entrepreneur and you can afford the fee, for example, I have the business account right now, and it's great to be able to, again, just get more information on individuals. However, I think for most people, I still think the basic account will do what they need if they don't fall into one of those above categories. So hopefully that helps people a little bit in terms of understanding it, but it's a little overwhelming when you dive in on your own.
The whole thing about someone, about me being able to see who's viewed my profile is, yeah, part of that is, oh, that's just, I hate that. I hate that feature. I hate not knowing what people know about my behavior. Then again, LinkedIn is not the place to be like stalking people the way that you look through people's photo albums on Facebook. Now, I know that there is update information. There's certainly a fair amount of personal information that you could share on LinkedIn that goes above and beyond where the last place you worked is, if you desired. But it's, I think there's probably a lot less of that. Ooh, somebody went to my profile again. That's weird, because I'm not updating it so often, at least with the kind of information that I'd feel uncomfortable if people were seeing regularly.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it doesn't feel as though the privacy issues are that severe within LinkedIn, because you're only sharing a limited amount of information. And I think from a user's perspective, I was kind of fascinated. I mean, I've always loved stats when I'm, you know, whether it's my website and I'm digging through the stats just to get a sense of who's visiting there. But I think with LinkedIn, you do get a little bit hooked once you upgrade to be able to see who's looking at your profile. And I think that if you're in the business, like I mentioned, if you're an entrepreneur, or you're trying to kind of brand yourself or sell something, it's helpful to have those type of analytics, that information, to get a sense of who you're targeting, who's interested in looking at what you're doing. But it's not cheap, right? I mean, I think back to the days of Flickr when you had to upgrade to a pro account. It was pretty cheap for the full year. I want to say I remember doing it for maybe $20, $25 a year. Does that sound right, Sarah?
Yeah. In fact, I don't think it's more than that now. I think that's about
right.
Yeah,
it's fairly inexpensive. But with LinkedIn, you know, many of the accounts, the upgrade starts at $24.95 a month. I mean, I don't know about you, but more and more I'm looking at my credit card bills and I'm seeing like all of these digital subscriptions that I have to YouSendIt, to LinkedIn Now, all these different services, and it does add up to a lot. So before you upgrade, I think you just need to figure out if it makes sense and if you really truly need it, because it's quite expensive. Hence LinkedIn having such great results last year, or last week when we were talking about it, as far as their second quarter. And it turns out that 20% of their revenue is actually based on these membership services. So they're doing pretty well and will continue to do well.
Well, kudos to LinkedIn for finding something that works for them. And obviously, yeah, I mean, they're raking in money from people who think that these upgrade services are worth it. So they are providing a service that people want. And, you know, my guess is most of those are corporations who have that kind of money to spend.
Yeah.
And fewer individuals. But doesn't mean that it doesn't make sense for you. If you are looking for a job and you're really serious about it, it's worth drilling down into some of your options to see if you have better access to people. All right, Amber, we have talked to death on the entire Twit Network about the horrible story of tech journalist Matt Honan's accounts being hacked, and the hackers who had access to one account finally all of a sudden had access to many accounts, which resulted in things like his MacBook being completely wiped, which contained baby pictures that weren't backed up anywhere else, and pretty much a horror story in every regard. And out of that came some tips on, hey, well, if you're not doing this, and you're not doing this, and you're not doing this, then you're not secure online, and you should rectify that immediately.
Yeah, I knew you had talked a lot about it on other Twitch shows, and it's you know, pretty scary. I was reading about Matt, I think his last name's Honan, when he experienced this, and he lost a bunch of emails and photos of his daughter and all of this really personal information. So just wanted to mention as our social media tip this week, if you're a Gmail user, and we know a lot of you are, a really simple way that you can protect yourself further within Gmail by using two-factor verification. So the idea being that it's really a backup. So when someone, or when you're trying to get into your account, you forget your password, it's not just as though you know, you're getting an email sent to another account. You actually can set this up so that you are texted a special code that will then allow you access. So it's just protecting yourself at a different level, and it's just taking that extra precaution. So it's just important, I think, for Gmail users who want to be safe.
Yes, and it is, this is something that every so often Gmail will, after I've signed out or something, over the last, I don't know, couple of years, I guess, Gmail will say, do you want to turn on two-factor authentication? And up until just a couple of days ago, I was like, no, I don't know. It's fine. And, you know, I change my password pretty often and this and that. And once I heard this story, and, it, you know, it's my fault. I'm stupid for not having turned this on ahead of time. But once I heard the story, it was like, you know what, this is just, this takes the cake. Because this is somebody who also felt pretty secure, knew his way around how technology works and how password cracking works and why bad people do the things that they do. And this is a really, really bad situation that, you know, fortunately, he's a journalist, so he works at Wired and has had a great platform to tell people how they can avoid having this sort of thing happen to them. But it was really, really easy for me to turn on two-factor authentication. Gmail will walk you right through it. It is not difficult at all. You may have to be, you know, prompted for your code, your PIN, every so often. And if you access Gmail from a variety of places, like, okay, I access Gmail from my laptop, I access Gmail via my Mail app on my iPad, also on my iPhone, those will now all have these unique codes that once you set them up one by one, I swear, I mean, the whole thing will take you 5 minutes max. You get a little PIN that's sent to your phone, which is a phone number that you associate with your Gmail account, and so everything's got these sort of unique codes that keeps you logged into Gmail. So it's, you know, without getting too much into the minutia of it. And in fact, if you want minutia, watch this week's know-how, because I, as a CEO, talked about it in very specific steps to help you. But yeah, I think it's, there's no reason not to be safer when you can be. It's a free service,
definitely.
You know, it's not anything that you have to pay for either.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a really simple little step that you can do to make yourself safer online. I think it's something we always, you know, take for granted that everything's going to be fine and you get a high profile story like the story we just heard, and it's a little scary for everyone. Now, Sarah, this week's spotlight, I sent it to you a couple days ago because I thought I cannot forget this spotlight because I think it's really cool. And from a social media perspective, it really combines a lot of the things that we've talked about on the show before, especially when we talk about social good and giving back and, you know, the Pinterest-like experiences and all of those different things. So the service is called Mulu.me. That's Mulu.me. The idea being that you are able to have a page of things that you like or things that you're buying, and you're able to actually get money back from those things that maybe you recommended that other people have bought, and take either 10% for yourself or give 10% towards a cause, a worthy cause that you care about, whether it's, there's a bunch listed on their website like Greenpeace and Rock the Vote, and the list goes on. So you can actually give money back from those online purchases to a specific thing that you care about. So I think we're seeing more and more of this, the idea of social media and social good wrapped in together. And this one has an element of commerce as well.
Yeah, I actually set up my account because I liked the look of it. I just, you know, hey, I'm a sucker for design, so I went ahead and set up my account. And Mulu had asked me right off the bat, hey, you know, what are some of the things that you're interested in? So I said art, tech, shoes, you know, the basics, right? So let's say that, you know, I'm flipping through here and I'm really interested in this Eco Extreme. So I go ahead and click through, and this is more information. It shows me who originally shared it. fellow by the name of Eric. We don't know each other, but this is how it turned up on my page. Now, if I want to go ahead and repick this is what seems a lot like Pinterest to me. Mm-hmm. I can go ahead and do that and say, like, yeah, this is pretty cool. I can give a reason that I think it's awesome, which is, you know, a little bit like, you know, Pinterest comment type of thing. I'll go ahead and not do that because I don't know enough about it to say that I want it or not. But if I go ahead and keep clicking through to the original website, and I get to the point where I'm going to buy this, it says here, purchasing this pick could earn cash to the person who shared it. Now, I've been clicked over to an Amazon page. So this is the Eco Extreme. Oh, it's not really very expensive at all. Extreme waterproof floating case with a built-in speaker. Oh, that's neat. Yeah, I can get it for, I don't know, under $40. So maybe I do that. So what happens? Well, the person who ended up sharing this gets a little piece of the pie, which then, yeah, they can associate with a charity. I went ahead and in my account, I'll show you my account page. Click through to my account. So I've got my account settings. And if you go to the earnings area, I said, yes, I would like to curate for a cause. Now I could choose, I want to earn for myself. And it's kind of nice that Mulu isn't saying anything like, you can't choose that. Although I figure, you know, let's go charity. I have chosen the ASPCA because I love animals. But if you see in the drop-down menu, I mean, you have all sorts of charities here. The charity that you know may already be associated with is probably on this list. It's pretty thorough. But I went ahead and chose that one. So that is if I've got a curated page of my own, right? So I'm going ahead and I'm repicking and I'm saving stuff. And when you go to my profile, which is pretty bare bones right now, all of a sudden you see a lot of things. But if people start clicking on those things, then I end up generating money for my charity, which you sort of say, well, I mean, so why don't all websites do that? And that's a good question. I mean, I guess it's because Mulu is a for-profit company, as far as I can see. They're taking a smaller percentage of each transaction that other companies are, and passing the savings along to either you or your charity that you've decided to associate yourself with through affiliate commissions, which is pretty standard practice. I love this. I mean, I hope Mulu can succeed by doing this. I mean, I assume that they just get less money per transaction, which means that they need more participation. Mm-hmm. But I love the idea. I think it's great.
Yeah, no, it's just a really cool, simple idea. And I think just a growing trend as well. So kind of a fun one for our spotlight of the week. And Sarah, we have an email. I think that this person has a service I've never heard of, if I'm right, or a Twitter account. I see.
Yeah, this is from Nicole. She wrote in and she said, I heard on your last show you were talking about funny Twitter accounts. Amber, I believe that you had it was a Canadian account. It was like That's So Canada or whatever it was.
Stats Canada. Just a parody account.
That's so, I'm thinking of something else. That's So Canada. Stats Canada. That's right. Nicole says, specifically, there's one I thought you might like. This is twitter.com/sarcasticrover. She says, being the social media gurus that you are, you probably already know about it, though. Sincerely, Nicole. Well, I have news for you, Nicole. I didn't know about it. Amber, I don't know if you heard about Sarcastic Rover or not.
No, but I like it already, Sarah.
Yeah, this is a parody account, of course, of the Mars Rover. And it's funny. And what's nice, too, is that up in the description, right up at the top, it says, listen, I'm not Mars Curiosity. That is the official account. So this is not an attempt to really confuse anybody. This is a funny take on the mystery and wonder that is our landing on Mars back on Sunday night, which was very, very exciting, right? So this is bringing a little lightheartedness and comedy to the great feat that we are now experiencing.
Very cool. That's a lot of fun. It's I haven't read any of the tweets. Are there any that are standouts, Sarah, that you see? I gotta look it up, I guess.
Well, I can read this dramatically. This one was from 4 hours ago from Sarcastic Grower. Who's the genius who put the radiation detector on the atomic robot? All it does is beep constantly and I can't shut it off.
Nice.
I assume very that that's funny. What a rover sounds like. By the way, Sarcastic Rover has more followers than I do. So,
oh wow!
I guess maybe I got to go more parody. I got to start parodying scientific breakthroughs, and then mm-hmm. I'd really have made it, you know?
Yeah. Yep, then you would really make it. It's tough to compete with this, though. Someone obviously has a lot of time on their hands and is a very creative writer, and that it's a lot of effort, right?
These are the sorts of accounts where 1 week, 2 weeks, sometimes it's pretty funny. And I find that even some of the best accounts, they, you know, the person loses interest. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're like, whatever happened to that fun account? Or it's a account like, I love this one, which is stuff girls say, except replace stuff with the actual swear word. That's really funny. But that person only tweets maybe once a week, or at least that's as often as I'm seeing those. So yeah, parody accounts. It's a delicate balance of funny and time commitment, I guess. All right, Amber, let's move on to the, what is it this time? The meme of the week.
Our meme of the week, this is a good one. It's Olympic theme because we have been talking about the Olympics on the show. And this is based on an American gymnast. Her name is Michaela Maroney. I don't know her at all. Sarah, you might be familiar with her.
I do, yes. She's one of the Fab Five that got the group gold for the American gymnastics team.
Okay, well, according to this meme that has been created, I guess there is a photo of her where she doesn't look very impressed with how she fared at the Olympics, although as far as I understand, I believe she at least got silver, and she did pretty well. But someone has taken this image, and they've created this really funny Tumblr account, and it's called, let's see here, Michaela is not impressed.tumblr.com, and it has her in a bunch of different images, you know, during wars, on the Dropbox homepage. There's one with her with the in a movies, at the moon landing, and the list goes on and on.
She's not impressed everywhere.
Yeah, so she's not impressed in all. And you know what? There are a lot of them. I'm just scrolling through the page like you are, Sarah. And it appears that there are dozens and dozens and dozens. And someone has spent a lot of time putting her in these very famous scenes where she's unimpressed. Continues to be unimpressed.
I love it. This is a good meme, Michaela. No, okay. So just in case you're like Amber and you're like, I don't even, what? It's just a picture. It's kind of it's sort of a big deal because this is a gymnast who, she got the silver in the vault portion of individual competition. And she does a vault that almost nobody else can actually land. It's very complicated. It's worth a lot of points. She's really, really good. You know, she gets more air than, you know, anybody else that's in gymnastics. So the fact that she fell and only got silver when she's done this a million times kind of thing instead of gold is sort of part of the backstory. So, you know, I don't know, maybe she was just kind of making a funny face right there, but she probably really was like, oh gosh, you know, I mean, what an off day I just had. I'm supposed to be the champ, you know, I'm supposed to be the best at this particular sport. So
it's too funny. Actually, I know you're never going to get there because you'd have to scroll so far down the Tumblr account. But if you get to the very bottom of the page, as far as internet culture, there's a picture of her and it has the double rainbow behind her, which was obviously a very famous internet meme. And she's standing there, not very impressed with the double rainbow. And just above, there's an unable to connect to the internet page as well. Google Chrome can't connect and she's not too happy with that either. So kind of funny, you know, one still image has taken on a life of its own within the Tumblr universe.
Oh, Michaela, thank you for making the expression that launched 1,000 memes. That's a good one. Michaela Maroney.
Yeah, it's funny.
Not impressed.
It's harmless too, right?
Crossing the Delaware.
Yeah, it's a good one. Now, Sarah, we have our rad or fad, and I don't know. I guess we should do our little brief about where people can tune in to see us, or do you want to jump right into it?
Fine. I guess so. The Social Hour at twit.tv, of course, is where you can email us. Thanks to everyone who emailed in this week. Obviously, you can leave a voicemail. I tell you the number every week, and for some reason, you're all just afraid. You're cowards. No, you're for whatever reason, you're emailing more than you're voicemailing, and that's fine, but I'll just go ahead and give you the numbers anyway, so you can leave a message for us on our Google voicemail box if you so desire. The number is 2626-SOCIAL. So 2626 and spell out SOCIAL, and you hear our little voices on the other end, and then you can tell us something fun that's social media related. That would be helpful. Or you can record a video, upload it somewhere, send us the link, and we'll feature it on a future episode. And now, Amber, I don't want to wait anymore for your rad or fad.
Oh, I don't even know what to say about this one, Sarah. So I stumbled across this article. The article is called Birth Photography, the Latest Trend in Really Social Media. And I thought, I'm going to take a look at this. And basically, it's a long, thorough article about how there is a growing trend of people who are giving birth who have hired professional photographers to be there during the birth and to then immediately be able to share those photos through social media channels. It goes into great detail as well about, people even going one step further when they first have the ultrasounds, to have ultrasound sharing and streaming parties. And so the whole idea before the kid is even born and pictures even make it to Facebook, that there is that social sharing experience. Now, from someone who's had a child, I don't know. I mean, I think those first few moments of the kid coming into the world, it's a great private experience. It's nice to have photos, but it's not exactly the most beautiful thing unless you're the parents. And that's the nicest way that I can say that.
I still have these nightmares of, I think it was like seventh grade, where you finally have to have that class. I think it's, at least in California, it was required, and you have to watch a birth, and we might have even had to watch more than one, and it was very traumatic. I knew what happened, but I had never seen anything like that before. And to this day, I'm like, no, thank you. So, but the thing is these aren't like, it's not like videos of the birth happening. It's moments later, and the baby maybe is looking a little worse for the wear. It's a traumatic experience, for the babies.
Oh yeah.
And I think there's a certain person who thinks it's beautiful no matter what, and then there are other people who go, I know it was great for you, but I don't need to see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that especially in the social media space, the only reason that I would almost put this into the fad category, although I don't think it is, but I'm kind of hoping it is that, yeah, it's a beautiful experience. It's a wonderful thing having a child. I get all of that from firsthand experience. But the reality is I still feel from the child's perspective, and this is why I don't share photos of my son online, I kind of want him to make that decision when he's older in terms of how he wants to present himself online, what he wants to put out there. And I don't know if making that choice for a child from the moment they're born from a situation where they didn't even have a second to have a private life is really the way that we should treat our kids. So that's why I'm hoping it's a fad, but I fear it may not be.
I fear it may not be either, particularly because we've got overzealous parents who have all these tools now. And, that's a very good point, Amber. And I've actually never really thought about that, I guess maybe in the way that you have, because I don't have my own children, but it's true. There are many friends of mine who take a lot of pictures of their kids. And on one hand, it's really nice for me. If you think of Deuce.com, for example, that's a great example of somebody I don't know, but she's a very famous blogger, Heather Armstrong, whose kids have grown up, since being infants to like being in school now. And you like that. You're sort of like, that's appreciative and all the cute kids and everything. But yeah, again, you're in a situation where the child did not make that decision for themselves, and maybe it's going to be a problem later on in life. I hope it won't be, but it's just hard to know.
Yeah, but who knows? Yeah, and I think that if people, maybe if you censored a little bit more, you're more careful about what you put online, but I don't think that people really are. And I think the reality is, you don't know if your child's going to have a very public life, and maybe that's the type of stuff that they want to remain private. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I think, until they get to be like 13 or whenever they're allowed to join social networks on their own, then I think it's kind of nice to protect them a little bit in the digital space.
I'm with you. So two fads from us, although we don't make the rules,
No.
Maybe
it
will give you pause the next time you have a baby.
And if you disagree with us, by all means, let us know if there's some reason that I should have done this. I tweeted right after I had my son. I thought that was enough, but you're never going to see pictures. It's never going to happen.
Very true.
So, yes. We'll see. So let us know what you think.
I promise that I won't be sharing things like that immediately afterwards. Actually, you know what? I shouldn't say that. Maybe the miracle of life will be such that I throw all of my thinking out the window and I become a totally different person. That seems to have happened to some of my friends, without naming.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's possible. I do believe that when my son was first born, my partner had put some pictures online, and it was very early on, and they have since been removed because you think your child is beautiful, and my son was beautiful, but the reality is when you look back on it, you're like, well, he's beautiful to me, but he's kind of a scrunched up, wrinkly little human, and I don't know, it's not the most attractive time.
Yes, definitely. It's up to the parent, I suppose. But when you get into social, then it's like there are a lot of other people involved. So yeah, definitely something to think about. So birth photography, yeah, let's call it a fad and see how we feel in another year or so.
See what happens.
Well, Amber, we have come to the end of our hour. We're in under the hour. Somebody in chat before we started said, you guys always go over an hour. Well, we didn't today, chat room. So thanks to everybody who watched us live. Reminder that starting next week again, we'll be back at our regular time, Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Please do join us. We have a lot of fun on Fridays. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. And you know how to get a hold of us. You can also find our show on iTunes. And thanks to everybody who gave us nice reviews so far. If you feel so inclined, you can do that too. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. Thanks for watching, and we will see you soon.